We are 2 weeks, not even quite 2 weeks out from the beginning of She Speaks. And we're doing fine, right? Just absolutely fine. We have totally recovered from perfectionism and performancism and people pleasing, and we're sleeping like babies
Really? Do we
and
have to talk about this today? Okay, because some people may not know what She Speaks is, but basically, you go and you're with 800 fabulous women where you feel like you might not be fabulous. And you meet with publishers who may send you a pile of rejection letters. So there you go. Yeah, we're fine.
So I like how we've now changed our podcast from Grit and Grace to the Liars Society.
Yeah, the reality is that I have big bags under my eyes and I'm shaky tired. How about you?
Yeah, I've been waking up at 2:37 in the morning with the list of things that aren't getting done rolling through my head. So, if anybody out there is going to She Speaks, first of all, be sure to come and say hi, because we would love to see you, and we would love
Yes.
to, I'd say autograph something, but there's nothing to autograph for a podcast, so never mind. But let's also be honest, because this morning we did have a good conversation about what we need to quit trying to get done, because we're just going to have to decide that we're ready enough, even if everything on our list isn't going to be completely checked off. What did we decide was more important than getting everything done?
Sleep and
Yes.
rest and feeling like human beings when we get there. And that really is a huge leap for both of us
It
because
is.
in the past, oh my goodness, it wouldn't have mattered how tired or sick I was by the time I got there. I would have finished what I committed to you and to myself to finish. And we are letting it go, girl.
Absolutely. I'm proud of you for even bringing it up to ask, basically. So, how much more? I think that's almost how you phrase it. So, how much more do we have to do? And I actually picked up on the desperation in your voice, which back in my perfectionistic days, I wouldn't have heard it. I would have been like, we are going to finish the thing. We started, we're going to finish.
I'm so thankful you didn't do that. I might have put my head down and cried. So, yeah. Oh, so grace is what I needed today.
Well, this is Sherry Gregory.
And I'm Amy Carroll.
And you're listening to Grit and Grace, good girls breaking bad rules.
Today, we're reflecting on what we learned from our conversation with Mary DeMuth, author of Worth Living. I had an experience this week that tied in so well to our conversation with Mary. Mary said, "In my practice, my everyday living, I believe that my worth is tied to performance and perfection. And so when I fall short of that goal," this was important, "I freeze up or I try over and over and over to be perfect until I just exhaust the life out of it." I loved that. The fact that her piano teacher that just said, "You made it so perfect, you just took the life out of it." Wow, trying to be perfect exhausts the life out of it.
Well, Daniel is a musician, and he's told me that the word it for music that has been edited too much and had too many computer generated things done to it is that it's overprocessed, and that actually our ears do not enjoy music that is perfect. One of the reasons we enjoy listening to the old record albums is the imperfections. And that's why we love a live performance. It's called texture. It adds texture to the music. And there's something about us that resonates with that in ways that we don't resonate with the perfectly slick and exhausted, but perfect. There's no life in it.
So good. Well, and what I experienced this last weekend is I was spending time with a friend who went through really a terrible tragedy, a terrible trauma in her life a couple years ago. And I knew it was a significant weekend for her. So in my brain, Sherry, I had been going, "Don't talk about blank. Don't talk about blank. Don't talk about blank. Don't." And you know what I did? I talked about it like in the dumbest possible
So
way. And
sorry.
the minute it came out of my mouth, I just, that panicked,
Oh, yeah.
horrible feeling. Like, I cannot believe I just said
You're
that.
reaching out into midair trying to pull it back.
Yes. And in the middle of it, I just went, "Oh, girl, I'm so sorry." And then I just kept like refocused and started talking about something else because I knew she didn't want to talk about it. But that night, I couldn't sleep. I
Sure.
couldn't go to sleep. I woke up early in the morning and
Yep.
just devastated and sick to my stomach. But then I just laid there in bed and prayed, God, would you please give me a chance to redeem this today? And he was so sweet to give me time to talk to her some more, where she actually brought up the situation. And it was an opportunity to not be dumb. To say that. And it was so good. But I just thought that over practicing in my head actually did me in. Because I talked about a subject I never talk about because I was over practicing in my head. Is that weird?
No, I think it's very, very normal. And the thing I really want to congratulate you for is that as you woke up and you were, you know, ruminating on it, that you recognized what was happening. Because one of the things people say about perfectionists that makes me so crazy is they're like, perfectionists just make everything all about them. And I'm like, no, we really don't. And yet we do, you know, but it doesn't feel that way. Like, you felt so bad for what you had done because you care about your friend.
Yes.
And so really your initial reaction was about her. But there's that line that gets crossed when we are ruminating on it and everybody else would love to move on, but we can't forgive ourselves. Somewhere in there, it becomes about us. And so you were able to give that to God and look for fresh opportunities to not stay so stuck on your mistake. It was, oh, I'm so sorry, Amy. Does this mean you're still human?
I know. Well, thank goodness for Brené Brown. Can we just once again thank Jesus for Brené Brown? I'm not being facetious. I'm being for real. Because that afternoon, after our second conversation, where God did give me a chance to redeem the situation, I was reading Rising Strong and just hearing her once again talking about the difference between guilt and shame. Perfectionism will lead us to shame every time. Guilt says, I said something dumb and insensitive. Shame says, I am dumb and insensitive. And that morning, laying in bed, I actually said that. You are so dumb. Oh. You are so sensitive. And when I read it, gosh, it's bringing tears to my eyes. When I read it in the book, I thought, oh, I've got to switch that. I do care about people. Yeah. That's why the perfectionism is so devastating. And that's where it actually came from.
Deep love.
Deep love and a deep longing to connect. And yet it's what keeps us from connecting. It's so, so destructive and such a process to break up with it.
So instead of saying, I'm dumb, I'm insensitive, what did you shift it to?
That was a dumb thing to say. God helped me to redeem that. And he gave me that opportunity. He's so sweet like that.
And it's okay to say that was a dumb thing to say. If it was dumb. I'm not saying that to you right now.
No, it was.
But it is such a difference, because part of what you're doing is you're holding out there. You're not saying, I didn't say that. You're not walking away from responsibility. But you're not you're also not internalizing it and saying that's part of my DNA. I am this kind of a person. You're holding it out, looking at it with some objectivity and saying, wow, that was a dumb thing to say. That was an insensitive thing that I said. And when you name it and surrender it, then there's actually something you can do about it.
Mary talked about performance. And her whole thing about not shaving her legs when she was...
I was just looking at my notes on that, trying to figure out how to work it in. Can we do the permission to not shave our legs? How can we throw that in this episode?
I wish. I'm a dark-haired girl. It would get ugly really fast, but...
I'm Armenian. Do you want to have a competition when I visit this summer?
Yes, let's do. Poor Barry, two girls with hairy legs hanging out at the house. But, you know, she makes the point that, by golly, really nobody else notices.
Exactly.
We don't have to perform because nobody else is really paying attention. They're thinking about their stuff. And I just thought, oh, once again, this whole performance and perfectionism is so self-centered. And you're right. Like, as we grow, we should recognize the self-centeredness when we're stuck there. If I stayed sick to my stomach, that's self-centered in a lot of ways. It's just navel gazing. You know, it looks like humility, but it's not. It's pride and self-centeredness and an overestimation of our own importance. But when we start focusing on others, we're not performing. It really becomes caring rather than just trying to do the perfect thing.
You know, lately I've been discovering, and I haven't figured out exactly if there's a formula to it, but I'm finding myself recognizing sooner in a potential conversation or in an email I'm writing the point at which I'm starting to make it all about me. Like, I'll think of something to say, and then I'll ask myself, is that going to move us forward, or is that just going to throw the spotlight over to me and make me feel good in the moment? And, you know, sometimes I'll still say it because I want the spotlight, but it's just, I'm recognizing this, or maybe it'll give us all a good laugh. Those are generally worthwhile. But especially in an email where I'm finding myself either over-explaining or going into too much detail, maybe in some kind of a protective, defensive, or even look how great, I'm like, what would happen if I cut this email down to just the first line? Just focus on the one thing rather than packing it all in. And it's really been freeing. I'm just starting to feel like, oh, is this what it means that it's not all about me? Is this what it looks like to move on? I'm learning to spot some of that unnecessary navel gazing.
And I know in the past that all that explaining and stuff is really, it really is all about us. And it's to get the other person on board. It sounds like humility and, oh, I'm so pitiful and I'm so sorry. But really, it's manipulative. It's to get the other person on board with our point of view, even if they're the ones that we've hurt. Craziness.
Okay, do you not see the pained expression on my face? You know, you can stop talking at any moment.
Well, I only recognize it because I've done it. Yeah.
It's control again. The more words I'm using, the more I'm trying to reach in and change their mind so it matches what I want them to. Oh, my goodness. You know, the whole conversation about prioritizing people over the tasks that we need to do, the productivity, the performance. It took me way, way back years and years ago. I think Daniel and I had barely been married 3 or 4 years. And we went to a marriage encounter. And it was an amazing weekend. And when we got to the end, when we had an opportunity to share kind of what we had learned, I stood up and I took the mic. I didn't know what I was going to say. And I literally burst into tears. And I said, you know, this is the first time I've understood that I've been treating my relationship like a to-do list. And that you can't approach relationships like procedures. Oh, that lack of finality. It could always go wrong. I'm sure that's vulnerability and fear that takes over at that point. But I think at least for me, that's where the performance mentality and the checklist mentality comes in, because I know how to do that and feel good about it. I don't know how to just feel good about a relationship, no matter what circumstance it's in. I guess I use those performance metrics to judge my worth in the relationship.
Oh, I can so identify with that. And, you know, the thing that I've come to realize and appreciate over the years is there's just no formula, because we're, I know.
Oh, you had to go speak truth again.
Well, and I mean, everything in us and everything in our world, and I hate to say, but especially our Christian world, wants to formalize everything, and especially marriage, I think, and parenting.
Oh,
if you just do these things, it's all going to turn out okay. And number one, that's not true, we know. And number two, to reduce relationships to a formula is so sad. It's just so sad because we're all so different.
Well, and of course, the only relationship I don't want reduced to a formula is your relationship with me, because I'm way too complicated for that. I'm way too intriguing and quirky. How dare you reduce me to a formula, but I would like to reduce the rest of you to a checklist. Okay, we just lost all of our listeners, Amy. They're never going to tune in again.
That's so terrible.
The thing that I kind of jumped on and I have been thinking about ever since is the idea of trusting versus entrusting. And I think there's a big difference there.
Entrust is that full surrender. Mm-hmm. It's a placing yourself completely. Really, the only one we should do that to is God, because everybody else, including us, is going to fail in some way. And so there's inevitable disappointment if we entrust ourselves to a human being. And Mary pointed out, Jesus didn't even do that. He knew who he could entrust himself to. Trust is beautiful and it's important, but it has some limits.
Yeah.
And it has some boundaries that the word entrust doesn't seem to have. I don't know if that makes sense.
Oh, it makes total sense. I hear so often, we have trust issues, we have trust issues. And I thought, no, it's not trust issues, it's entrust issues. Mm-hmm. When we say we have trust issues, what we really need to realize is that the issue is we have entrusted ourselves to the wrong people. And that, at least for me, when I think of it that way, I'm less cynical about the people who've let me down. I'm like, well, of course they've let me down, because that's what people do. Making the distinction between entrusting and trusting allows us to take a candid look at what people actually can and can't give us, and how much we can and can't trust them without going overboard and giving them everything and being massively codependent, or pulling completely away because you can't trust anybody, so you're just going to go live alone on a mountaintop.
Well, and the difference is being crushed by disappointment or not. Now, I won't say that I'm never disappointed in people, but it just doesn't shock me when I am.
Yeah.
And so it's not overwhelming, because I kind of know, well, yeah, I'm going to disappoint them one of these days.
Well, you pulled out a bad rule from this episode. What is that?
Perfect performances lead to love.
Okay, you keep doing this to me. I keep staring at these going, yeah, and why is that a bad rule?
Well, girl, I'm not pulling them out of thin air. They're kind of being pulled like a painful sword out of my heart.
Oh, man. Okay. But when I step back and take a candid look at that, I know it's not true. You know, this, I think, is one of the advantages of the significant age that we are approaching or have reached. At some point, we recognize the exhaustion. You know, when you're in your 20s and 30s, you think you can actually get there. And Mary talked about the treadmill that goes nowhere. And I think at some point, you get a little more willing to say, yeah, yeah, it's time to turn it off and try something different. So what's the new fact that we can focus on instead?
I'm already perfectly loved by God.
Oh, I love that. And then you chose a beautiful scripture, 1 John 4:18.
There is no fear in love, but perfect love drives out fear. And I wrestled with that, because I thought, does that really go with our conversation?
Oh,
I'm
yes.
Like, oh, all this perfectionism and performance is rooted in fear. The fear we won't be loved, the fear we won't be enough, the fear that we won't be connected to people, the fear that we fall short. It's just, yeah.
And I think it's important to recognize that it's legitimate to be drawn to perfection, but it's not our perfection. Mm-hmm. It's the perfect love of God that drives out our fear. On our own, as we strive for perfection, all we're going to do is generate more fear. So no fear in love, perfect love drives out fear.
Beautifully said.
Head over to gritandgracegirls.com/episode58.
You'll find links to this week's Digging Deeper download, Bible verse art, and transcript.
If you've enjoyed episode number 58 of Grit and Grace, Good Girls Breaking Bad Rules, would you share it with your friends? You'll find super easy share buttons on the webpage for every single episode.
And be sure to join us next week when we'll be talking with Carrie Scott, author of Uncommon, Pursuing a Life of Passion and Purpose.
For today, grow your grit. Embrace God's grace. And when you run across a bad rule, you know what to do. Go right on ahead and
break it.
I love that you had so many great aha moments and organized thoughts from Mary's episode. What I have is completely disorganized. So we're just going to pretend that I am practicing spontaneity this morning. How's that?
Oh, awesome.
I'm going to just let you start us off and see where we want to dive in. So lead us off.
Well, gosh, Mary's... let me start again.
You don't get any do-overs on this show. You must get it right the first time.